On college campuses across the country, people are talking a lot about sustainability. Administrators are looking for ways to use energy more efficiently, to reduce waste, and also to promote environmental consciousness, while at the same time, of course, cutting their costs. This morning in this part of Focus 580, we'll talk a little bit about the greening of American higher education, and our guest is Terry Ruprecht. He is Director of Energy Conservation here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He has 35 years of experience working in higher education facilities. Before coming here to Illinois, he held engineering and faculty management positions at Michigan State University for over 16 years. He's a registered professional engineer in Michigan and Illinois, and he's also a certified energy manager. And as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. I know he'd do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So, at any point here, questions are certainly welcome. The only thing we ask of callers is they try to keep their questions brief so that we can keep moving along, but anyone's welcome to call. Well, thanks very much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
I think now probably in many fields, sustainability is now the big buzzword. It's something that everybody is talking about. And maybe a place to start, it would be to say, well, if we're talking about the university campus, what does that mean? What does sustainability mean?
I think sustainability for most campuses has come to mean really two things. One, the nature of the design and construction of their facilities. We want to build our buildings today in ways that are wiser in terms of use of materials. When I was a kid, my dad was one of the Depression babies, and his basic philosophy in everything was never use more than you need. And I think that's really what the sustainability movement is about, certainly in the construction portion of the effort. The other side of sustainability, of course, is reducing energy consumption. And that has been accelerated by the increasing cost of energy, particularly in the last 3 to 5 years.
Hmm. What's the energy bill for the University of Illinois? Do you actually have that number in your head?
As a matter of fact, I do. I can give you a couple of numbers. In 2003, the Urbana campus energy bill was about $28 million. In 2006, it was just shy of $71 million. So you can see why energy has become very quickly a strong central focus for this campus.
Yeah, that's a tremendous increase in just a short period of time.
Huge.
How much of the energy that the campus uses does the campus itself generate? We do, in fact, have a power plant, but that doesn't supply the energy needs for the entire campus.
That's correct. Our power plant, I'll refer to it as Abbott, since that's the name. Abbott Power Plant essentially provides about two-thirds of our annual energy use. That number has been going up. There was an addition put on Abbott Power Plant a few years ago with two additional electrical generators. And so we're able to generate more of our annual electrical use than we used to.
Mm-hmm. And just to give a sense of the infrastructure that's here now on the campus, in terms of the age of buildings, what's sort of the spread between – I'm sure we have buildings now that were just built within the last couple of years, and we also have buildings that go back to, well, the 19th century. Do we actually have some that old?
Yes, we do. We absolutely do. Yeah, our one of the things that campuses look at is the average age of a square foot of building. The University of Illinois, for the historical folks, it's delightful to know that the average age of our building is one of the oldest, if not the oldest, in the Big Ten. Unfortunately, that means that we have a tremendous amount of unmet deferred maintenance need. We have an awful lot of renovation that needs to happen, particularly in the older buildings, so that if you have a historic campus and a a significant average age. It's sort of a two-edged sword.
Mm-hmm. Well, that shows that when you're talking about sustainability in design and you talk about sustainability design construction, so that's a certain set of concerns that you have when you're building a new building, if we're going to start now to build a building. But also you have this other issue because you have a lot of older buildings that that were built to a different kind of standard. So over time, what you want to do is bring those up to contemporary energy standards as well. And I know that that's a significant issue, something that you've written about. I know that a lot of places across the country, not just this one of the things that universities have done to deal with their budget squeeze has been to put off maintenance. And there are places now, this university and a lot of other places, where there's a huge backlog of deferred maintenance. And we're not just talking, you know, this is not just trying to bring things up to contemporary standards. It's just meeting basic needs of aging buildings.
That's absolutely correct. I think probably the best way to portray that, building costs come in three distinct categories. There's one-time costs, which is essentially the cost to build the building, design and build it initially, and then at the end of its life, quite frankly, to tear it down. The second category are what we call recurring annual costs. Those are the kind of things you have to pay the utility bill, you have custodial care, you have some day-to-day maintenance issues you have to tend to, kind of regular day-to-day costs that most people are familiar with. The third cost category are periodic recurring costs. If you're a homeowner, the periodic recurring costs look like if you've been in a house 20 years, you're going to have to re-roof it. In today's world, that's probably, for many houses, $15,000 to $25,000. So the problem that we see, particularly in the institutional facility side, is certainly designing and constructing the building, a great number of people come together because it's very exciting to add new facilities. And so there's a lot of help in finding those dollars to build them. There is certainly less help in the annual maintenance requirements, but there is by far and away the least attention put on the periodic recurring, those larger scale projects that you have to do every 20 or 30 years. In addition to the homeowner analogy of re-roofing, another one is furnace replacement. Many homeowners that have been in a house for 25 or 30 years have had to replace a furnace or an air conditioner. Well, you know, the scale of that is manageable for a homeowner. When you're an institution that has 20 million square feet like we are, there is a cascading effect of all of that periodic recurring maintenance to the point that it arrives at hundreds of millions of dollars over the years. Yeah.
I have a caller here I'm going to get to in just a second, I promise. Just to ask a follow-up, though, it's really clear here that you have an important issue in that it is sometimes the government will give you money to build a building, or an individual will give you a significant amount of money to build a building, and that's a great thing. You know, you really want to thank those kinds of major donors because the infrastructure gets enlarged, and so we have a lot of nice buildings because generous people come along and say, oh, we'll give you $5 million, $10 million, that's great. But does someone try to approach them and say, you know, this is a wonderful thing. We really want to thank you. This is going to be a beautiful building. But I wonder if you could consider including a little money here so that not only will we build you a beautiful building, but it will continue to stand and be beautiful and serve generations of students.
That's absolutely a key point, and one of the things we advocated in the book that my colleagues and I put together is essentially endowing the maintenance, investing sufficient money such that the income off of that investment will in fact pay for the maintenance, both the annual recurring and the periodic recurring. And we used the term sustainable. Another meaning of the word sustainable points to the need for regular reinvestment in facilities. If you don't regularly reinvest in a facility, it will degrade and eventually fall down.
Hmm. Is that a hard argument to make?
It's a very hard argument to make. Two things happen. One, if you run the basic numbers I'm talking about energy and maintenance costs, and you compare that to construction costs, about 50 cents on the dollar would need to go into the maintenance endowment. That means two things. Either your donor is going to have to give you twice as much money, or you're going to build a building that is about half the size or cost that you had that you thought you were going to. One takes a great deal of courage on the part of the donor. The other one takes a great deal of courage on the part of the owner. And what we see typically is that doesn't happen.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Terry Ruprecht. He is the Director of Energy Conservation at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have a caller here on our line 1 in Champaign.
Hi. Good morning, Mr. Ruprecht. Thank you for assisting to this event. I have two questions, and both are related to existing buildings. First, I want to know how many of your buildings in the Urbana campus are Energy Star rated. And the second question is, what plans does the university have to use energy savings performance contracting to upgrade the energy consumption of the existing buildings?
Okay. The first question, I'm not familiar with Energy Star buildings. We have become an Energy Star campus in the last year or so, which means we subscribe to certain standards that the federal government EPA sets forth regarding purchasing energy efficient equipment, et cetera. In speaking to the basic issue of energy use in buildings, the more common standard today for energy-efficient buildings is LEED.
That is for new buildings. For existing buildings, the most current is the Energy Star.
Well,
for buildings.
There's also LEED has a standard called LEED EB. EB stands for existing buildings. And we're pressing in that direction for our buildings. But the direct answer to your question is no, we don't have any that are Energy Star today. The new business instructional facility will, in fact, be our first LEED building, and it will be a LEED Gold facility.
Right. But, I understand the LEED standard is for environmental leadership. And actually, with a LEED rating system, you could have a LEED building, but being a non-efficient energy building. In other words, LEED has many more things besides energy efficiency.
That's true. There are a lot of criteria. It is, in general, people who embrace the LEED philosophy are not likely to build an inefficient building that, for example, saves only water or has a green roof. It is possible to do that using their scoring system, I understand, but it's not likely to happen today.
Right. Now, with the existing buildings, the LEED for existing buildings, they use Energy Star rating to assign the points for the LEED grading of existing buildings. I was just curious. You can rate your buildings according to the Energy Star standards and figure out where you are, what grade you get, okay? I was just wondering if the U of I has done it. I remember writing a proposal to do it, but I never got any answer. So I thought that maybe the U of I has done it.
We have not approached our buildings from an Energy Star standpoint. The comparison that we've done for a number of years is looking at our energy use per gross square foot of building space, and then comparing ourselves to peer institutions, most commonly the Big Ten. And we know that in terms of energy efficiency, we don't stack up well against our Big Ten peers. We're about 10% over the Big Ten average.
Anyway, I'll be glad to provide more information about the Energy Star rating system for existing buildings. And I hope the university undertake this effort. It will bring you a lot of information about where your building's rate one by one compared to the average U.S. building in each category for office buildings and so forth. So anyway, thank you very much, and I keep listening.
All right. Well, so clearly the university is not where you would like it to be, where I'm sure where anybody would like it to be. What sort of, we talked a little bit before we got going here, that obviously this is something that really takes time. What sort of a time frame and how much improvement have you said, well, at, 5 years from now, we'd like to be at this place, and 10 years from now, we'd like to be at this place, and maybe you, I don't know how many years, you might say even 15 years or 20 years that you might like to be at this place.
Chancellor Herman just put forth a new goal for the campus just a little over a week ago, and that is that we will reduce our energy consumption 10% over the next 3 years. We believe that's very possible, and of course that 10% would not only save something in the range of $7 million a year, but that 10% also puts us, at least gets us to the Big Ten average. Now, for then looking past those 3 years, say to the following 3 to 6 years, maybe stretching out as far as 10, we believe that another 15% reduction is possible over that time frame, mm-hmm. using a number of different strategies.
Well, I'm sure that there are things that you could do that would take some time to implement and would be expensive. What are the first things right up front? You probably think, well, now I know that there are things we can do right away that won't take that long to implement, that won't be that expensive. What are the very first things that you think about doing?
The first thing is really following the philosophy of don't run it when you don't need it. We have thousands of horsepower of heating, ventilating, air conditioning systems on this campus that over the past 20 or 30 years, the running times have increased steadily and slowly to where we have many, many systems that run 24 hours a day. Starting, quite frankly, in earnest, just a couple of weeks ago, after Chancellor Herman's challenge to us, we've begun to go through the buildings and essentially reduce that running time. That really requires only us to set computer-based start-stop times. The more difficult part is getting the agreement of the people in the buildings who have grown very accustomed to having the systems and the buildings comfortable 24 hours a day. That may have been something we could afford to do 5 years ago. Today, it is not something that we can afford to do. So that's the lowest hanging fruit, as the expression says, is really shutting down equipment at night and during unoccupied times. Another low-hanging fruit item that we're after is the retrofit of light fixtures. The majority of light fixtures on this campus are 4-foot fluorescent tubes that were put in over 30 years. There's now a new standard for fluorescent tubes that uses a fraction of the electricity of the old fluorescent tubes. And if we put that in along with a new electronic ballast, we can drop the energy consumption of the light fixtures almost a third. And in fact, we applied for a grant to the Illinois Clean Energy Foundation and received a delightfully positive response from them. They will reimburse us up to $1.2 million as we go through our 45 of our buildings and do those lighting conversions over the next couple of years.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk with some of the folks here. Champagne is next. This is line two. Hello. Is there a caller there? Yes, go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering, earlier you quoted figures about the bill, the cost of energy, and then you referenced Abbott power plant. I was wondering, since you said two-thirds of the power came from Abbott, I assume that two-thirds of that cost that you quoted comes from Abbott as well. If that's true, I would just want to know if that was true. And what was the reason for the incredible increase in power? I'll hang up and listen offline. Thanks.
Okay. The The two-thirds number is typically not something that you can apply as a rule to both energy quantity and dollars. As I'm sure most people understand, the energy we get comes from different sources. We can buy essentially off of a Midwestern grid for the electricity that that we're not able to generate on our own. In the summertime, particularly on a hot summer day, that electricity is very expensive. In the middle of the night, in the spring and the fall, that energy is much, much less expensive. So the two-thirds, I'm really looking at BTUs, essentially, what the amount of energy, and it doesn't directly translate to costs.
Right. And the if I wrote these numbers down right, just again, you said in 2003 the energy bill for the university was $28 million. In 2006 it had gone up to $71 million. So why was there such a big increase?
More than anything else, it was the fact that both the cost of coal and the cost of natural gas, which are the two fuels that we employ at Abbott Power Plant, the cost of both of those fuels rose dramatically in that time frame. Most homeowners know what's happened to their bills at home, particularly on the natural gas side. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at your January bill at home now compared to what it was 3-4 years ago, and it's notably higher. And we have exactly the same effect at Abbott Power Plant. Coal has taken a significant uptick in price to the point if you look over that same 4-year time period, are the price of coal delivered at Abbott Power Plant went up about 70% over that same time frame. Mm-hmm. So even though coal is our least expensive fuel by far on a BTU basis, the costs have still gone up remarkably.
Mm-hmm. Line 3 is next, and this is someone listening in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. Was calling to find out from Terry, what's the status these days of the metering in a lot of the facilities at U of I? I remember a number of years ago looking into this with some of the folks at U of I, and a lot of the buildings, it was really hard to account for how much electricity and steam was being used because of the fact that, you know, on a large campus, just like a military installation, places they, a lot of metering wasn't in place, so it was really hard to determine which buildings were sort of the big culprits.
Actually, that's we're pretty proud of that. We the electric metering actually has always been in very good shape. Electric meters have been around a long time, and they're pretty much trouble free. And they give you pretty accurate numbers consistently. Steam is an entirely different critter. Steam is much harder to measure, and steam metering is very maintenance intensive. You spend a lot of money just trying to keep the meters running and accurate. When we recognized that a year and a half ago, when the energy costs first started to hit us in a big way, and so we invested a little bit over $1.5 million over the past year and a half, replacing steam meters in 80 buildings. Those 80 buildings consume 90% of the campus energy. So we have new steam metering, and we're able to employ newer technology meters that aren't as maintenance intensive as the old ones were. And so we now have very good numbers, and we know what we're using on a month-to-month basis.
Oh, that's great. Well, as a follow-up question, right as I was getting on, the other caller was talking about the Energy Star system, and I think I'd heard part of your response that the Energy Star rating system is kind of incorporated into LEED EB, and it's actually incorporated into LEED NC also, in terms of that energy efficiency credit. So I think that your response was, I think, essentially correct that. It's part of it's sort of being eclipsed by LEED to some degree. But another question regarding LEED is, I'd heard anecdotally that the university was building that all new buildings were going to attempt to be LEED certified or potentially LEED silver, maybe. Is that?
That's absolutely correct. We have updated the U of I construction standards, and all major projects on this campus, and that would we categorize that as any project over $5 million must be LEED Silver or better.
Wow. And are, in doing that, is the university looking at doing the independent commissioning then at this point? Or are, I know you had some in-house controls guys that do a form of commissioning on a lot of the buildings. Is the university going to be procuring independent commissioning now?
We have actually two kinds of commissioning. We have a commissioning group that looks at how new buildings operate when they're turned over to us by the contractor. And then we have a retro commissioning crew, and that's probably the one that you're thinking about. That's a team we assembled just within the last year, and they go through existing buildings and examine and fine-tune and make adjustments and repairs to all of the existing HVAC systems.
Okay. All right, great. Well, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. For people who work in buildings around the university, I'm sure that their major concerns are that they're warm in the winter and cool in the summer, the lights are on, there's running water, and that people don't think about the bill. They don't know what it costs. They don't see it. So for them, it's energy savings and the energy bill of the university is kind of a vague and abstract concept. Is there some way that you can make the costs more visible to all of the people who are using those buildings so that then they will think, aha, maybe if I do this or don't do this, it's going to affect the bottom line, and to the extent that we all do that, that's a good thing.
Yes. The answer is a resounding yes. With the new metering that we put in place and the accuracy that we have, we are now producing energy statements that go to the colleges and the major administrative units on campus. We send the energy statements out on a quarterly basis, but they provide the details for on a monthly with monthly data, and it tells each college and administrative unit the amount of the utilities in the buildings in which they have space, how much of the cost for the energy in that building they're responsible for. And this is across six different utilities, water, chilled water, sewer, steam, electricity, and natural gas. So we've begun to address exactly that invisibility. One of the reasons that we got energy inefficient over the years is nobody paid a bill. And we recognized early on that was something we were going to have to change. And that is course, probably our single biggest challenge is changing the campus culture from one where people have never had to think about energy because the buildings were comfortable and, well, gosh, somebody was paying for it somewhere, to one where everybody begins to think about their use of energy, whether it's turning their computer off at night, turning the lights off when they leave the room, et cetera. All of those contributions add up.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Terry Ruprecht. He is Director of Energy Conservation at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign, has many years of experience in higher education facilities. He held engineering and faculty management positions at Michigan State University for over 16 years before coming to the U of I. He's a registered professional engineer in Michigan and Illinois and a certified energy manager. And we're talking about sustainability issues on college campuses, this one in particular. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We have a caller in Naperville. This is our line four, the toll free line. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. Great topic. I'm glad you're putting that out there. Now, I'm in facility maintenance myself, and I do it for a corporate entity, but I used to do it for a school district. And it's very, people don't understand the budgeting process, and I think the budget process there would have to allow. Whatever modifications you do. But one thing comes to mind that I thought was kind of neat. I don't know if by code you can do it, but wind energy, some of these wind turbines, and I know down south there's people out there in certain small towns that have wind turbines that actually save money, and they have been reversing some of that power into selling it back to ComEd or whoever's down there. The second thing is light bulbs. I deal with this on a daily basis. All these new fancy light bulbs they throw out there, well, they have a hazard to them. And with your amount of light bulbs there, I could see this happening. You can't throw them in the landfill because they have mercury in them. So you're going to have to find a place that takes them, kind of like the oil, if you change your own oil in your vehicle scenario. Good thing is fixtures. You know, how much are you going to spend on fixtures and changing light bulbs out? Do you think it's cheaper just to change a fixture versus the lighting system? I know ballasts are not cheap. I'm just throwing at it. I'm looking at it as a maintenance thing. As a maintenance guy, I firmly believe that you want to get something that's not going to cost you maintenance problems in the long run. But anyway, I'll get off. Thanks. Great talk.
Okay. Well, thanks for the question. Well, I think that the guy, the caller asked two good questions. Maybe let's deal with the second one first, because I think that people are aware it's been suggested that they could save money by going to compact fluorescents to use in their homes. The issue there, though, is that, as the caller said, there's a little bit of mercury in these bulbs, and you're not supposed to just throw them in the trash. So you have a waste disposal issue, and I'm sure that with a place the size of the University of Illinois, we already have a lot of fluorescent tubes that you got to get rid of. But I suppose if you then move to trying to get, if the idea is to use more efficient lighting and maybe use more compact fluorescents, then you got a serious kind of waste disposal problem.
The good news is that, as you point out, David, we a number of years ago had to set up facilities at the university for the recycling of fluorescent tubes, because the traditional, I shouldn't say traditional, the older fluorescent tubes did have mercury in them. And there were laws passed a number of years ago that required the recycling of those and preclude us from, or anyone, from putting them in a landfill. So as a large university, and our typical annual replacement of 4-foot fluorescent tubes is about $40,000 a year. So as you can see, the recycling of those old fluorescent tubes is not insignificant from a material handling standpoint. Mm-hmm. So the conversion for us to compact fluorescence, which we have been doing now for about a year and a half to 2 years, on a continual ongoing basis, that really presents little problem for us, because we, in fact, are equipped to deal with recycling of I have a much greater concern on a national basis from the residential use of compact fluorescence. Mm. I have no idea how the country will grapple with that disposal issue.
Do you think that there is potential for the university on some kind of significant scale to use renewable energy?
There definitely is over time. I've told a number of people that our challenge over the next 10 to 20 years is, number one, we have to do dollar management. We have to get the energy bill down, and that's what we're focusing on right now. But while we're doing that, and then once we get the energy bill down to something that becomes manageable, now it's all about looking for renewable and alternate sources that will not put carbon in the air. Mm-hmm. For example, we do have a project that will put a wind turbine in on the South Campus. That wind turbine will produce about 1.5 megawatts of electricity, which, although that's not a large portion of our typical electrical demand on campus, it will be a great facility for us from an instructional standpoint. It offers research opportunities for our faculty. So I think we're pretty excited about the fact that we will have some wind generation on this campus.
So I have no idea how many square feet of roof there are on the University of Illinois campus. Do you think that the idea of actually having some active solar, putting solar collectors on roofs, or if you could design the roof so the entire roof would in fact be a solar collector, that would be something that would be it would pay for itself eventually?
I think we'll see that more and more. A company in California, and I can't recall the name right now, but they just released a new technology within the last 6 months And they believe, they claim that they now have the cost of photovoltaic electricity down to about the point of traditional fossil fuel generated electricity. Mm-hmm. That's never been possible before. Most of the photovoltaic equipment that was out there could produce electricity, but at a significantly greater aggregate cost, if you look at first cost plus recurring. So I think, yes, as technology brings new advantages to us, I think we'll see far more application of photovoltaic. Our new business instructional facility, in fact, has photovoltaic panels on the roof. And if this company on the West Coast, if their technology is true, we'll see rapid deployment of that everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Our next caller is in Urbana. We have several. We'll take them in order, starting with line one. Hello? Yes.
Back to the first caller with Energy Star. I guess I don't quite see how you can decide how to proceed if you don't know the how individual buildings line up. And the second thing is, in terms of how we stand up with the Big Ten, it seems like that's setting the bar awfully low, and it'd be a chance for University of Illinois to make a mark here. I mean, we have one of the best engineering schools in the country.
Well, I think certainly we're not – I'm not saying that getting to the Big Ten average is our total goal. It's that's the first goal we have for – that's the goal we have for the next 3 years, is to get us to get reduced 10% and get us to that Big Ten average. Your earlier question, it doesn't take an Energy Star rating on a building for us to know where the energy goes. Now that we have accurate metering in our buildings, we know exactly which buildings use how much energy and in what quantity and over what times of year. So our ability to focus our conservation efforts is, quite frankly, working just fine for us right now. The Energy Star might give us some broader comparison, but quite frankly, you know, if I'm comparing one of our institutional research buildings to a strip mall in Sarasota, Florida, there's marginal benefit for us in doing that. The real benefit is for us to look at other institutions that are doing the same kind of things that we're doing and see how we stack up against them.
Yeah. And you said, now, if I remember right, you said that the chancellor set this goal that he wanted to see a 3% reduction.
No, it's 10% in 3 years.
Okay, that's where I get the three from. 10% over the next 3 years.
Right.
And then what do you think that you could do? I mean, what do you think that would be a reasonable goal, let's say, in over the next 10 years?
I think 25% reduction is very doable from where we are today. Now the as I said earlier, one of the more daunting aspects of that is we have to get everybody on campus to be part of the effort. It can't be a matter of, well, energy conservation is somebody else's job. I'm just over here in my building and I get to use whatever I want. We really do have to get everybody so that they're conscious of what they're using and making an effort to use less.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk with Urbana. This is line number two. Hello. Yes.
I had a question about computers on campus, because I have an office in one of the older buildings on Wright Street, and we were told to leave our computers on overnight because the central system gets adjusted at night and they like to send change. I guess the campus is entirely wired now and they want to be able to make improvements or adjustments at night. And I always thought that was a waste of energy, but I just heard you say something earlier about, you know, we should turn our computers off. Well, we've been told to leave our computers on after we leave the office. So do you have any thoughts on that, about maybe working with the central management of computers on campus to change that policy? Because I do think it's a waste of energy.
That's been That's been a very controversial issue for the last year. And I think I'd, if I was recommending, if you thought I was recommending that everybody turn off their computer, I'm not doing that. I'd like to see that. But I recognize that across the campus, there's a difference of opinion on how feasible or how practical it is to turn off computers at night. I can tell you that I've been on this campus 20 years, and every place I have been, I turn off my computer at night and turn it on in the morning, and I have no troubles whatsoever.
Right.
There are, however, other places on campus where the network administrators give people very clear direction to leave their computers on at night.
Yeah.
There's typically two reasons they give. One is they want to do the security updates. Well, you know, that's, from my opinion, that's not a good reason to leave computers on, because when you turn your computer on in the morning, you can have it set so that any security updates will automatically be installed when it boots up in the morning. There is another broader issue that the network managers talk about, and that's one of system backup. There are some computing environments where they actually go around at night and basically back up all the work that people have done, because people are not storing their work on a central server. They're storing it on their C drive. And the concern is if they have a computer failure, that they'll lose that work. So there's a central backup feature that some units proceed with each night. I'm sensing that as I talk to the IT managers, that becomes really one of the big issues. But we have an ongoing dialogue now with the campus IT community, and this is something that hopefully we'll be able to solve in the next few months.
Okay. Other question I had is about not being able to open the window in my office. It's, like I said, it's one of the older buildings on Wright Street, and it's been sealed shut, and there's an air conditioner in that building, but there's certain days in the spring and the fall when I don't need to use the air conditioner, and I just like to be able to open the window. But I guess that's not something you can you can address right now. But I just think just being able to open a window and ventilate a room can save a lot of energy, too. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. I'd just like to introduce again our guest for anybody who might have just tuned in. Terry Ruprecht is the Director of Energy Conservation at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. We're talking about sustainability on college campuses, this one in particular, and I've been spending a lot of time here talking about energy. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and another Urbana caller here next, line 3. Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
Yeah. I think you have at least a PR problem on your hand when we oftentimes notice that we come back from somewhere at midnight and lights in the stadium and other outdoor sports facilities are on. Those are major, major energy consumers. Maybe the Athletic Association is a separate unit and they can afford to pay for it, perhaps, looking at how they pay coaches and other people. But at least outsiders would not look at it as a separate issue, and they may think, what is the university doing at midnight when nobody reasonably practices at that time? So I was wondering if there is anything that you have thought about or done about.
The stadium is one, as you might imagine, that I've heard a lot about in the last year. What, unfortunately, still many people don't understand is that the stadium is undergoing a $112 million renovation that had to be done in a 12-month period between the – actually, a little more than 12 months. Nevertheless, it is a severely constrained time schedule, and the stadium work has to be done before the opening football game this year. As a consequence, the contractors have been working two, sometimes more, shifts a day for a good portion of that stadium project. The reason you saw lights on in the middle of the night is really so that the contractors can be working in the stadium. But you're quite correct. It has definitely given us a PR problem. And in the winter months when those lights were on, I would get probably 3-4 telephone calls a week, people wanting to know why the lights in the stadium were on since we didn't have football practices anymore.
Okay. It seems like working can be done under less severe lighting than that, because it also connects to some of the discussion that is going on in Champaign-Urbana that light pollution at night is a problem, and they're trying to reduce some of that. I've seen in Chicago area night work going on highway, which goes at much lower level of lighting than the stadium lights, and that certainly poses at least a PR problem. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And again to Rantoul next, line one. Hello.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I'll just make a couple of comments. I've been using compact fluorescents for a number of years and have recently been changing over to sunlight spectrum lights because they're more efficient, because your eye operates more efficiently in the 57-nanometer area. And I'm assuming, I could be wrong, I assume that you're probably in the process of going to the higher frequency spectrum lamps at the university, because essentially eye works more efficiently, therefore you could use slightly less energy. And then the second thing is, have you looked at the idea of using a digester for processing organic wastes of whatever it is, bacteria can convert it into methane gas? Years ago, my neighbor, who had a master's degree in environmental engineering, built a digester on his back porch to test it, ran it for a year, consistently produced methane gas, and we dumped it open. The stuff that came out looked and smelled like ordinary paper mache. And then the third thing I'd make a comment, what about the ultra-low RPM diesel engines like used on ships? Because of their combustion cycle being a low RPM, they can use a lower grade of fuel and be quite efficient, and would be an excellent way of using perhaps recyclable fuel or whatever it is. And I'll just hang up and let you talk about it.
I'm really not familiar with what may be happening on campus in the way of a digester. I'm familiar basically with the technology, but I really can't tell you what we're doing right now. Moving a little bit toward your comments about diesel, we with the student sustainability committee that we have, and the fact that the students have voted to tax themselves to create a flow of dollars to put into sustainable projects. One of the projects that the students have, in fact, contributed toward is a biodiesel tank at the university carpool. And so we're now using waste oil that comes from the housing facilities and using that as to augment essentially plain diesel fuel. My understanding is about 5%. So all of our university vehicles that use diesel, we're now putting about 5% of biodiesel in there. The one thing I would point out, that if you look at the energy use of the Urbana campus, all of the fuel burned by all U of I vehicles, whether it's carpool vehicles, tractors in the farms, anything like that, amounts to about 2% of our annual energy use. 94 to 95% of our annual energy burn happens at Abbott Power Plant in terms of what we generate or what we purchase. So the diesel application you're talking about, I think in some arenas undoubtedly has applicability. For us, our focus is on the much larger issue of electricity and steam consumption in the campus.
Well, maybe about a minute left. We could try to get at least one more call, and this would be someone in Champaign in line two.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what's being done or if anything's being addressed with regard to my maybe less direct energy consumption, like using local food in the dining services versus trucking in all the food and things like that. So I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thanks.
All right.
Our housing people, in fact, are looking at that. I believe they have, in fact, made moves in that direction of finding more local sources. I know I've been working with two people in the housing system regarding energy and sustainability, and I can tell you that they're very active and very cooperative in that manner.
Do they do something, or what do they do with organic material, food scraps, all that kind of stuff? I'm sure that all the trimmings and all the stuff like that can be composted. I'm guessing that it probably is, or it's all the stuff from trimming the trees and cutting the grass and all that. What about all that stuff, all the waste that comes out of the dining halls?
And I don't really know, David. That's a good question, and one that I'm not prepared to answer. But I know we have folks on the housing side that can certainly respond to that.
Okay. Well, in any case, we're going to have to stop, and my apologies. We have a couple of callers we can't take. Perhaps on another day we can talk some more about some of these issues, see how things are going as they go along. But for the moment, we'll have to leave it there. Is there some place, by the way, that people can go to see, and I'm sure that there is on paper somewhere, an energy plan for the future of the campus?
We have the campus has an energy policy. The best place to go is we have a website, www.energymanagement.uiuc.edu. And at that website, you can see the energy policy. We also have those energy statements, the ones that we distribute to the colleges and the administrative units. Those are now available online also. You can look at those.
All right, great. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, David.
Terry Ruppicht is Director of Energy Conservation here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.